Until you are deemed victimized or extorted by this prisoner, please contact customer service at 855-466.
All subject matter in the preceding podcast is entirely alleged and not admissible in a court of law. A recklessly minimal effort has been taken to change the names and details of any guilty parties. And just in case you rat bastards get any ideas, the hosts of this podcast are notorious and well-documented liars with no legally admissible credibility. This is Mama C, and you're listening to Notes from the Pen podcast. Welcome to prison, bitch.
Greetings from the prison industrial complex. You're listening to the Notes from the Pen podcast, and I am Bobby Cow. Welcome to my incarceration. Today, I have everyone's favorite as a co-host, JD. What's up, bud?
Hey! Coming to you live from the Ironing Board Studios.
It's been a minute.
And it's been a long minute.
It's been a couple weeks since we laid something down.
International travels.
Vasectomies.
Lunches with famous people's mothers.
What's this?
What do you mean? You.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, fair enough. I'm like, who? Who the hell have you been seeing all the time? You fucking dirty bastard, you little fame whore, you. Yeah, that's right. We haven't done anything since then, since the meeting of co-hosts.
Yes.
And I guess this is as good a time as any to say that since you're listening to JD's voice, that means Mama C was slain in the Mortal Kombat that had to take place to decide who would be the one true ruler of the co-host realm. Rest in peace, Mama. We love you. We know you're up there mixing episodes in heaven or hell. Who knows? You know.
Oh no. No.
Okay. So yeah, it's been a minute. There's tons to catch up. We couldn't possibly do it all in one show here. Mm-mm. So we're going to cover it over the next couple of episodes, I'm sure.
Yep.
But of all the things I've been working on, including helping Mama C with her GoFundMe thing and the Kanye tape and then general securing of prison health care and all that other stuff, is the Incarcerated Writers Bureau.
Yes.
Right? We've kind of covered this. And within this program, when we're first of all, it's made to feature, you know, the most credentialed writers currently incarcerated in the American prison system. But along with that, they're doing a program where they're matching us with literary and publishing professionals, basically people in the industry with connections and stuff like that. And the mentorship / coaching program lasts a year. And during that time, they want us to choose two projects to work with this person on, right? Now, I get the vibe. What's up?
Well, you've got a lot to choose from. I mean, you've got quite a backlog of you know, things you've already written, and you know, you kind of had a leg up on that. I remember, I think the first time you talked about that, you and Justin, and Justin's like, I got to get to work, and you're like, well, I have a bunch of stuff already kind of in the can, but you were going to do some refining, correct?
Yeah, well, that stuff has to happen, and you know, I haven't had much access to, you know, literary professionals to kind of give me some pointers and stuff, and I'm lucky in that sense. I've just been grinding away and writing and creating and doing all that stuff, and I think the vibe from what Justin tells me with some of these things, I think a lot of these coaches are expecting to help some of these people publish a couple more individual pieces.
Okay.
Maybe work on like compiling a memoir, so you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you, like, what do you think their overall goal is? Like, do they have a, you know, I want to get you from point A to point B, or this is more of a true mentorship where there's really no true goal other than just to make you a better writer or help you become a better writer? Like, what do you, did they explain that to you at all?
Well, so this isn't, because they have a general mentorship program to teach people how to be better writers.
Okay.
I believe this is more focused on established writers, people who have a voice, who are already established. They know what they want to do. They're doing it. And this is about creating a database for, you know, literary journals, publishers, people in whatever creative industry to find the voices that are in prison without, because there's nothing, you know, there's no there's no directory for people who are in Hollywood or whatever it is to find people who are capable, who are in here and they're doing their thing and they have a voice and they kind of know they've honed their craft.
It's a hell of a concept, really, when you think about it, you know, that there's a place that, like, let's say somebody wants to write an episode about prison or they want to write a movie about prison. And it's like, instead of solely relying on themselves, now they're like you said, they're creating this database that they can go and, like, mine for content, correct?
Yeah, well, yeah, mine for sources of content, but yeah for sure.
You know, and that's interesting.
It's kind of surprised me that it wasn't already a thing, you know, but it's brilliant. It's a great idea, and, you know, their intentions are pure, and I know they just want to help amplify our voices because, you know, and this kind of goes into so basically here's my two as soon as they mention it in the contract that they sent me about, you know, the two projects to focus on, I immediately knew, like within a millisecond, I knew the first one would be The Clinic, my debut novel, which is came right from the gut. It's a labor of love. It's what a douchey term, that one is more for me and for this certain brand of Central Florida addiction and that whole realm. And it's a love story to the chaotic, eventually tragic life that this one group of people lived down in Central Florida in the late 90s, early 2000s. So that's the first one. Now that's going to need some editing, tightening up,
right?
Query letter, sample packet, stuff like that. The second thing I want to focus on is really what I view as my creative magnum opus, like the largest, the highest ambition, the thing that I want to do above and beyond all else. That's not just this thing I need to do. I want to do it. The thing like I need to do,
right.
I feel like, as far as not just self-serving, but it's also something I believe that needs to be out there.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And it's basically, the Pebbles will know this. You know, I've repeated it ad nauseum on the show, but one of the things, when I came to prison, even myself, who had read Chomsky and was aware of the prison industrial complex and stuff like that, you can know that stuff theoretically, but until you have some skin in the game,
right,
by either being in prison, having a family member in prison, or just knowing someone caught up in this meat grinder of a system, it's kind of academic, your understanding or your opposition to this, right? And Mama C and my dad and my sister and everyone who had to witness or take place in the experience of incarceration, albeit on the other side of the fence, immediately saw how insane, nonsensical, horrific, tragic, frustrating, all the negative adjectives you want to throw in there.
Right.
Inadequate. They realized how ridiculous it was. Mm. And it's my belief that in order to institute change against a completely entrenched bureaucratic system such as the American prison system, which is the largest in the world, you have to have people, a formidable size of the population give a shit about it, right? Mm-hmm. And from my experience, the only way you can get someone to give a shit about it is to have them know someone in prison.
Right.
Or, apart from locking up, you know, a quarter of the population, which would accomplish that goal, the next best thing is making everyone feel like they know someone in prison.
Sure.
Right? And so that's what the writing was about. That's, you know, started on Facebook and then went to the website and eventually, you know, evolved into the show.
Yep.
And basically trying to take every avenue to make as many people feel like they know someone in prison by simply telling my story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a lot of flaws and faults, and if I have any redeeming qualities, one of them is that I can, you know, I can convey experiences and I can tell a story.
Spin a yarn.
It's my belief that the highest pinnacle of storytelling, it used to be movies back in the day, remember? Like Godfather or Scarface. These really epic movies as ways to portray extreme storylines or circumstances, experiences. And by the way, I also believe that the height of storytelling like the highest level of difficulty, the highest execution of storytelling, is the connection of people with completely different experiences from one another, completely different worlds and points of reference, is connecting the farthest distance of experience through storytelling so that one person can relate to something that seemingly has nothing to do with anything that they've ever experienced in their life, right?
To me, that's
the ultimate form. That's the pinnacle of the art of storytelling. The wider the gap that you can somehow bridge through, and I believe the ways to do that are tapping into the universal human quality that we all experience, which are self-doubt, self-loathing, humor, and just touching on all those things.
Which do you think is the toughest medium to do that? Is it movie making? Is it through, you know, literature? Is it what? I mean, do you have an idea? Like, you know, what's the best? Obviously, visual is probably the easiest for people to digest. But, you know, I find, and this is just me personally, I think that, you know, through books, it's a lot better form for me to kind of get enveloped in a universe. You know what I mean? I mean, certainly movies are amazing and they can be absolutely fantastic and all that. But I think there's still something to be said about books and writing. They have a better job of creating a bigger world for you to live in within the story.
Right. Well, I think it's obviously that comes down to like some personal preference. Mm-hmm. I feel that books, writing, I think writing's one of the hardest, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's so easy to write terribly.
Yeah.
You know? Right?
Sure.
That's the first thing. The second thing is that not too many people have time to pick up a 300 to 500 page book, which is kind of what it takes to really immerse someone into a world that's feeling to their own. You know, you can write little essays and stuff like that, but to really feel in totality experience, it takes a lot, right? So I think the audience you reach is lower. I also don't think that it's the highest form of storytelling because you're limited to basically telling a story through the person's own inner monologue. Even though it's transcribed through your explanation, they're reading it, so you're limited by their imagination, right? I know you can describe everything, but someone reading Alice in Wonderland with a less developed imagination will view it differently, will picture it differently than someone with a really cultivated imagination.
Right.
The problem with movies, because movies get to use visual stuff.
You have 1 minute remaining.
Little details, nuance, music for theme and mood and lighting and visual focus and just all these things. But the problem with movies is, at their longest, they're what? That are palatable, two and a half hours.
2 hours about. Cut off time.
Two hours. That's not long enough to do a fully immersive, complex, and yet entertaining immersion in universe, right? So it's my opinion, and this has only been the last 15, 20 years that this has become possible. I believe the best format with the widest range, the largest palette of colors and abilities and tools at your disposal as a storyteller is serialized television.
Yep. Okay.
And I believe it really started with Breaking Bad. I mean, there's been plenty of shows before that. Some would say Sopranos and stuff. But watching Breaking Bad, you couldn't have had...
Wire, man.
Thank you for using Dell.
So I'm sure there's going to be a million examples, people that are going to shout out of their personal favorites. But to me, Breaking Bad was the first time I saw a long-form, believable evolution of a character to the extreme from being the biggest square in the world to being a believable, you know, ruthless killer at the end.
Sure.
Right. And I believe that show opened a lot of storytellers' eyes to what's possible. Because you remember TV, back when we were younger, TV used to be viewed as like second rate to movies. You know, it was less impressive. It was less illustrious or
except for what was it, you know, Cop Rock? That was a great show.
What?
I'm kidding. You don't remember there was a musical cop show. I think it was the guy that eventually did NYPD Blue. what's that guy's name? Anyhow,
no.
There was a show called I think it was called Cop Rock, but yeah, it was really, really bad.
Right, but that was a time that it's shows like that that were the reason. And there's still some really terrible shows. Most shows on network television are trash. But after Sopranos and Breaking Bad, see, the difference is Sopranos was on HBO. It was on a premium service. Breaking Bad was on AMC. And after that, it takes one person to do something right before everyone else realizes it's a possibility. It's an option, you know, and then you started seeing really good actors going to, you know, television series and stuff because it's just as far as storage. And then all these other series started to come out along the way. And I really like some AMC stuff. They're probably my second favorite channel, but as soon as Louis C.K. inked his FX deal, and I don't know if you know the story with that at all, if we've ever covered it. So at the time, this must have been 2012, 11,
okay.
10, somewhere around there. Louis C.K. was the biggest comic in the world. He was on, you know, whatever it was, People Magazine's Comic of the Year. He was winning all this stuff. I think Chewed Up was the special he came out with. He was just blowing up. Now, he'd been around for a while. He'd actually had two television shows. He had one weird, like, variety type show, and then he had a sitcom with Jim Norton. Jim Norton was in it, and it was basically a three-camera sitcom with a studio audience and stuff like that. Well, back then, and still nowadays with major networks, you know, you bring someone who's hilarious in, who's just at the top of their game comedically. They understand all the nuances of humor, and they're geniuses at comedy. And then you bring them into a network setting, and some stuffy middle to late aged man or woman who've never been funny in their lives gets to tell you what you do with your act of creation. It's like someone coming in and who knows nothing about music telling Beethoven to, like, why don't you put one of those dun 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 at the end? It did add drama, you know, telling Basquiat to tighten his lines up or something. You know, well, wouldn't it be nice if you put a smiley face? You know, it's in no other art form would that be a thing.
Right.
And so, of course, his shows tanked. They got canceled. And when he was super popular, though, you know, he had a resurgence. He got as big as he'd ever been, but just from stand-up, just from doing stand-up.
Right.
FX comes to him and says, hey, we want to do a show with you. And the long and short of it, from my understanding, is he says, yeah, no, those all worked out terrible. I don't want people to visit. And they kept coming to him. And he said, okay, I'll do it. I get total creative control.
Right.
And, of course, they were like, yeah, that's dead. No way. We can't do that. And so he said, okay, fine, fuck off. You know, he made like $1 million touring that year or whatever it was. And he's like, fuck off. But yeah, I'd rather not do my art if it's going to be, you know, compromised and shitty. So they kept coming back to him. And eventually they said, well, we got to be able to give you notes at least. And he said, nothing. I'm not even going to run these shows past. The only way I'm doing it, like I told you, is if you give me total creative control. I'm not even letting you approve anything. I'm just doing it, and that's that. And eventually they said, okay. And I don't think there had ever been a deal like his previously. And he did the Louis show.
Well,
and it was weird.
What about Chappelle? You think Chappelle got notes? With Chappelle's show, that came out before that. Well, I'm just wondering if he had, like, how much creative control. But you were asking if anybody before that, and I was just thinking maybe Chappelle had a lot of creative control for his.
Oh, I'm sure. I guarantee you he had notes. I guarantee you there were skits he wasn't allowed to do or had to change because execs at Comedy Central. That's a little different because it's a sketch comedy show. But I can promise you that there was someone hit Neil Brennan up and asked him about the nonsense that they had to have put them through. Yeah. Now he ended up getting away with a lot and pushing
my God.
The envelope. but there was no deal set up with Chappelle and Comedy Central that they don't get to look over or check or get notes or approve the stuff he does. I'd never heard of that being done.
Okay. Until Louis.
So finally they do it, and Louis has a critically acclaimed show. What do you know? The fucking unfunny execs take their hands off and let this guy who Louis, other than being a comic, you know, he went to NYU, he went to school and studied film, and he's really into filmmaking and stuff like that. and they took their hands off, and he created something different. It wasn't slapstick, silly, where's the zany neighbor? Why don't you have a zany neighbor in there? It was none of that shit. It was kind of dark, and it was more genuine and real. And
one of the best things that Stanhope I've ever seen him in was the Stanhope episode.
Oh, my God.
Dude.
For those of you who haven't seen, Stanhope is in my favorite episode of Louie. It's the first season. Mm-hmm. Stanhope plays... Because they did come up together here and there. Yep. They weren't like best friends or anything, but they were on the same scene. There's pictures of them together at Doug's book. He plays, I think it's Eddie.
I think that's right.
Anyways, he plays his character of Louis' former best friends who came. They came up in comedy together. And now that you brought this up, when I start talking about the show that I've written, it kind of has something to do with this because the underlying theme. Within this, that episode is Louis is super successful, and Doug is who Doug is in real, you know, in real life. He's the character he played isn't as successful as Stanhope actually is,
right?
But he's basically telling him, "Yeah, I'm going to kill myself. Let's go out and do a couple sets." And I just wanted to say, don't try to talk me out of it. I just wanted to see you one time before I go.
Right.
Let's go some sets. You're a fucking sellout. Let's go bomb and do open mics.
Yep.
Let's get back into our bag about what we started this for. You know, it's a brilliant. I met when I first started talking to Stanhope. I started talking to him about that character.
Okay.
And then he told me, you know, the BBC was approaching him about doing a show, and they. Wanted to base
really?
On the character.
Okay.
I kind of, Olivia Grace was the one. He's like, you want to write it? So then I wrote her some, just nerding out. Like I wrote her some notes, like what if character and blah, blah, blah. It's completely inappropriate and unwarranted. I just started this stuff. Like, what do you think about this?
Doug asked me to give you some ideas.
Right. So after the success of Louis, then there's just been a succession, especially on FX. There's been a succession of really amazing shows that they kind of Better Things, Breeders, The League. There's just all these.
You know what surprises me? They had The Wire, and The Wire was like what 2005 ish.
That was on FX. I thought that was HBO.
Pretty sure that was on FX. They got away with a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think that was on a premium. I mean, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was a premium channel.
I'll look, but anyway.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was a premium channel. Anyways, FX has come out with one. My favorite tone-wise is currently, their third season's on right now, it's Dave. And it's about this comedian who turned kind of joke rapper. Anyways, it's Atlanta.
Oh, that's right. Dave. Okay, yep, gotcha.
Yeah, Atlanta. So anyways, I love serialized television, and... To me, it's the best format. So I, you know, in order to fulfill this this purpose, I believe, which is to kind of tell the story of incarceration and to hopefully make everyone feel like they know someone in prison and to really tear down the two-dimensional depictions of what prison's like in every corny caricature of a prison movie with, you know, shaved head, tattooed people who are, you know... twisted up scowl face the whole time.
Right.
All that bullshit. Because as so long as, you know, we have unrealistic depictions of what prison is, you have to know what something is to change it. And you have to know what it is for real before you change it. So that's the other project I want to work on is this
your pilot.
Is this television series. It's my dream. It's
Man, if it's anything like you've been talking about and what we've read, there is nothing that's been done that's like it. There just hasn't been.
Well, this is what happened. I wrote a pilot episode for it. I kind of outlined the series arc, and I wrote a pilot episode, and really I believe it's up on the website. But really, the pilot episode is just an introduction. A brief introduction to the tone and the vibe and the characters in the show, right? I don't get to delve into the actual series arc of what it is. And it's, you know, a lot of these FX shows are pretty meta, right? Mm-hmm. Louis played a dude named Louis who was a comedian, and Pam Adlon in Better Things, who she's an actor and did the voice of, Bobby Hill and King of the Hill and stuff. Mm-hmm. So she basically plays a version of herself, and Dave plays a version. So I wrote the show, the Notes from a Pin Show. I don't know what we're going to call it or whatever. I wrote that as a meta, you know, experience of my incarceration. So the first season is all in prison, right? And it's the last year, the main character's named Benny. And the first season is the last year of a, you know, 10 to 12 year prison sentence for Benny.
Okay.
And in the first episode, it kind of hints at, through conversations with his mom, that he met this comedian named, in the pilot episode, Stan Douglas.
I forgot about Stan Douglas. Right. It's the fucking best.
And so we don't really get into it in the pilot episode. First, you're just kind of being introduced into the world. And for those of you who haven't read it, the first episode is a day in the life of prison, and Benny loses his ID. Well, at first it starts that he gets interrupted jacking off the night before. Like, he has a blanket hung up. It's like the Parnell setting. And everyone kind of knows because the CO taps on the thing, and they're kind of like, you know. So he wakes up the next morning. He's waiting to work out to go to the weight pit, and Toro comes out there, and, you know, he brings it up. I heard you got interrupted last night, blah, blah. And throughout the day, you realize, you know, Benny goes to pull his gloves out to work out, and he has one glove, and he can't find his ID later. And Toro comes up with the idea that, you know, it's bad luck to somehow the fact that he got interrupted mid masturbation and didn't get to finish is like bad luck.
Right.
So he's like a conspiracy thing, and Benny is a straight man, and then he's going, what is there, some Mexican folk tale about an unbusted nut I don't know about? Like, it has nothing to do with anything, right? And so the day progresses and shit keeps going awry.
Yeah, Benny's and not having finally, a good day.
And finally, at the end of the day, he says, fuck it. And, you know, there's, like, some scenes where Toro's trying to get him. He drops some porn off. He's trying to get him to
just go and, do it.
Right. And eventually, at the end of the night, he gets all pumped up watching TV. And there's a clip of Conor McGregor. I would like to apologize. So, you know what? And he ends up hanging the blanket up. And let's just say he finishes the job, and then he finds his idea. It's this whole thing. But it's basically just an introduction tone-wise of the show. But the larger series is where it gets really interesting. Mm-hmm. So
you have 1 minute remaining.
I wanted to find a way to kind of portray the hard line between prison and the free world, right? And so I didn't want the whole show to be just in prison, right?
Right.
So the one scene in the pilot episode that is on the outside world is through the phone. So the phone calls are the time when the scenes cut to the outside world, right?
Yep.
So you get introduced to this when he's talking to Mama C, and Benny's stepdad's asleep on the fucking recliner. Mom throws a remote at him, and there's just so. But what? The larger arc of the show is going to be this kind of debate between Apollonian and Dionysus, like comedy and stuff. But it has to do with basically Doug's character.
Thank you.
Okay.
So this might.
So hang on, real quick. Maybe not real quick. Who's playing Benny? Are you gonna play him?
I can probably play Benny, and
there you go, attaboy.
And Doug is gonna play
Stan Douglas.
But it, baked into this story, which you're about to hear, is going to be some of the, it's really, really layered in a very meta type separation between, you know, art and real life, imitating art and art imitating real life and all that stuff. So these two, Benny starts writing and posting stuff on Facebook, and he eventually creates a website. He gets a little bit of following, and he meets this comedian who he had been a fan of for a long
time. Sounds familiar. I don't know where you get these ideas.
I'm really creative. I just can make stuff up out of thin air.
Look at you. So the IWB has really made you blossom.
So they really bond over, like, this iconoclastic, irreverent, say anything, respect for creativity, art, humor, all this stuff, right?
Yep.
And they're, in a lot of ways, they're, aside from all the other stuff, from Benny being an inmate and Stan being a comedian that Benny had always liked, they kind of find this kindred spirit amongst them, that and they're both genuine people, so the other shit kind of falls away. Now, the push and pull is that Benny wants to write this show. He's been writing this show, and he kind of needs Stan to come along, not just needs him for, like, connections and stuff, but he also needs him to be part of this fucking story.
Got it.
And so Stan doesn't want anything to do with typical Hollywood, right, of the industry. He wants nothing to do with it. Yep. And his, and then it like kind of comes down to this philosophical difference where, you know, Stan has made his whole career doing exactly what the fuck he wants, when he wants, how he wants, right? Mm-hmm. And in no circumstance would he sacrifice that, except maybe for this want to help Benny, right? Mm-hmm. But he's trying to pull Benny towards the complete road comic, live like G.G. Allen type of reckless abandon. Let's get dirty in the real grit of the act of creation and fuck all that other, the suits, the corporate assholes and all that other shit.
Okay.
And Benny is trying to pull him towards a little bit of a compromise to say, right, but there's also things that I feel like need to be done and I want to accomplish. And you kind of have to compromise a little bit with some of these people, but they're both actively trying to pull the other one to their side of what it is that, that it means to be an artist or creative. And so the first season, Benny's getting ready to leave. And the last episode, he walks out of prison and stands there.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And they immediately go out on tour and, Benny agrees to go on tour because he's like, well, I can convince Stan somewhere along the way that we got to do this thing. You know, they kind of argue back and forth, and he ends up going out on tour with them. And then, so he goes directly from the drab, stifling confines of prison right to the most extreme version of life in the free world, which is drunk, you know, substance abusing, wild maniac of a road comic.
Yeah.
And so they go out there and they're immediately enmeshed in. Now, the first season will have scenes where they're having these conversations and Stan's backstage and a Bingo-ish type character's there. And
Bingo.
And so, right. So you get to see the contrast of Benny sitting on the cell, I mean, on a payphone in prison to them passing the phone around in this really like lively green room and even like, you know, Benny's mom and all this other stuff. So the second season is going to be about them being on the road and eventually without, you know, giving too much away, eventually Benny convinces Stan after, you know, they go to several cities and eventually it becomes clear that this type of life isn't all it's cracked up to be.
Sure.
And there's some sadness to it. There's some emptiness and some, you know, isolation to it in a way that reminds Benny in the late nights when he's going to sleep in an empty, you know, hotel room of prison. It reminds him of prison in a way. It's like an almost like an emotional prison in some of the circumstances he's in. And, you know, he's getting drunk with Stan and Stan ends up agreeing to at least entertain the idea of this show. So then it goes into two completely fish out of water for different circumstances, having to deal with the Hollywood scene of getting a show made by two complete outcasts. One, because they're a convicted felon who've been in prison for 10 years, and the other because they just, you know, Stan's pretty well known not wanting to work with anyone on this type of shit.
Yep.
And so it's these two knuckleheads trying to navigate the Hollywood scene in order to get this piece of art
without trying to compromise too much, right?
Right, and so there's going to be all kinds of layered shit. There's going to be flashbacks to prison. There's going to be, but ultimately, this is a vehicle to offer up a genuine portrayal of the absurdities of prison, of the nuance, of the shit you never see in any movie or anything, and to also to kind of explore what it means to stay connected to the outside world while you're in prison, what it means to stay productive while you're in here, what sacrifices you have to make for art, because that's the deep. You know, it's not going to be super overt, but that's the underlying issue too. Is what are you willing? What do you have to sacrifice, if anything? Where is that line to getting your art or your work out there in front of as many people as possible without compromising that thing? And where's that struggle at? And where's that line at? And through this, I want to get into all these common, universal, you know, experiences of all that everyone has of self-doubt and meaning and purpose and insecurities and humor and all this other shit.
I think it'll be interesting too that, you know, when this, if, when and if this progresses, you know, Stanhope's take on that too, like, his unwillingness to play the game, but at the same token, in order to do this show, it'd be neat to see, like, if he buys into it, and like, how would he make the show he's always wanted to make with, you know, like, you?
Do you mean the character in the show, or you mean, yes, Doug in real life?
I mean,
the character in the show.
You know, you're living this through the eyes of Benny, right? And I think it'd be interesting to see how he would take on that role. You know, the character he played in Louis was pretty close to the, you know, that was pretty much just him.
Yeah. And so is Road Dog.
Yeah. But I'm just curious to see if it's one of those things where he really gets behind it. He's like, you know what? This is, if I were to make a show, this is the way I would make it.
Well, this is going to, so the deal with, like I said, the line between real life and this actual show is, mm-hmm, really muddy, right? So I don't even need to delineate when I'm talking about this stuff. I'm just going to talk about it.
Right, okay.
So it's my belief that the only way to get Stan in the show to do something like this, mm-hmm, wouldn't be for himself. He wouldn't do it for himself.
Right.
He doesn't want to go out there and compromise. He doesn't want. So the only way is love and friendship and connection with Benny. And, mm-hmm, Benny basically says, like, listen, I don't want to do this without you. I can't do it without you. And I need you. And I know you would never do this, but I need you to do this.
Right.
Please do this with me. And, you know, there's going to be tons of conflict and push and pull, and who knows how it'll turn out in the show. Mm-hmm. But eventually, that's the only way that Stan would ever even do something like that, would be, okay, as a selfless act. And he would do it begrudgingly, both in real life, yeah, and in the show, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Where it would be, he would have say in the stuff, but I imagine more of it would be like, okay, give me the script. I'll, you know what, mm-hmm, I mean? I'll do, mm-hmm, you know, and during the making of the show, he's trying to pull Benny out. Like, let's go out. Let's do a set tonight. Let's go get shit. I'm like, we got to film in the morning and, mm-hmm, all this stuff. But yeah, there's tons to explore in that, but I never got to kind of explain the overarching, the series arc.
Right.
Like, yeah, there's going to be season arcs, and then there's gonna be obviously individual storylines for each episode, but the series arc is going to be this larger, you know, amount of all these different issues. But ultimately, so when I wrote the pilot, I showed a couple of people, and some people who had worked on screenplays before found it, and they were like, this is pretty interesting. And we posted it on Reddit. And it wasn't up for a couple of weeks before someone from, and we've talked about this on the show, a representative for the Bull City Film Festival found it and said, listen, this is really good. We'd like you to submit this to our festival this upcoming year, and we're going to waive the $150 fee,
okay,
and submitted, yep, it, and it made it to the last round or whatever. And one of the judges got hung up because it was too unrealistic in their mind, which... It's better than, but you know, some people might hear that and go, well, maybe he wrote it surrealistic, or I didn't. I wrote it pretty accurately to how prison goes, but you know, it really speaks to the fact that there aren't enough or any really.
That proves your point, actually.
Right. It's better than winning the thing was that they thought it was, I really had something here, if only it was more realistic. Just really, like, made my fucking day. I'm like, yeah, this is, they thought, with a no way, why does he have a tablet in there? You couldn't have a tablet. Mm-hmm. Why is it rude and juvenile and between some of the inmate? And it's like, right, this is prison. This is
exactly
what
it's like.
You guys don't know because there's only these characters of it. And anyway, I'm really stoked about this show. And I know I can do it. I know I can get it made. I mean, for the last couple of years, I watch series and I take notes and I write down where the first, second, third acts are, what commercial breaks are, what the dot. Like, you know, I'm watching these FA and I picture it as an FX original series or maybe Hulu or something. But Dave is really close tone wise. I love Atlanta, but Atlanta's a little too surreal.
Okay,
but Dave. Tone-wise, it's very absurd and ridiculous, but there's moments of poignancy and depth and, you know, internal struggle and things that are relatable to vast swaths of the country. I think they just closed the yard out here.
Oh,
let me go on the small one and we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
I haven't talked to you. ear off already.
It's all good.
Give me a minute.
All right, buddy.
All right,
buddy. Yeah.
Hey.
Hey. So would they close
it? We got like, yeah, out back, but I'm on the small there now. So anything you want to add?
No, I'm just excited to see it. You keep dangling this carrot in front of us.
Well, here's the thing. You know, I wrote the pilot. I'm gonna have that's the second thing I'm gonna project for this upcoming year, mm-hmm. and which probably means tightening up the project, writing a series synopsis or summary.
And then
kind of creating sample packets and doing all that stuff, and then shopping it around because. Yeah, this is something that we're gonna have to do, and just all the pebbles who've been listening forever, just with the podcast, we have so many ready-made shows, LOP shows, and going to the whole shows, and organization and fraternity shows, and
sinking our episodes, ships, sinking ship shows,
episodes, right? So, there's nothing. This just encapsulates it. Just of all the things that I want to do or have been doing, this feels the most like. Purpose or sure. meaning or faith, or it's a compilation of all the things that I need to do, want to do, and am able to do, like all mm-hmm. balled up into one perfect. This is what I was put here for. This is why everything in my past is led up to this. And I'm here to get this story made, to tell this story of incarceration and to get it out there.
And I think it's fun for us as fans too, to, you know, I'm already starting to imagine like certain people dropping in certain episodes and like, oh my God, that's Chop. And there's, Joe and there's, oh my God, there's fucking Johnny Blaze right there and live Johnny. In person. There he is.
Johnny Blaze. Yeah. I'm really excited. And, so one thing I've learned along the way doing the show and starting with just with Facebook and the website getting pulled is that there's all these things that you think are completely impossible until you put the work in and find out that some of this shit starts happening and becomes possible and it's real. And there's no doubt in my mind that this will happen one day.
Absolutely.
And I just can't wait. I'm just super excited. And there's going to be a lot of work to do, but I can feel being pulled towards this in a way that's kind of outside of my control and a little deeper than some of the personal experience I've had. But, yeah, everyone's along on this ride. All Absolutely. The pebbles, you, everyone that writes me on JPay, and I'm so grateful for all the support and the love and faith and belief and just everything everyone's given to me to help build my confidence and some confidence in my foundation of in the mission and what we're trying to do here. So, with that being said, on behalf of Benny Gladwell, Stan Douglas, Mama G, and DJ, we are gone.
We gone.
Hi, everybody. Mama C here. For the complete library, full episodes, and bonus content, and mainly to support this cause, visit Notes from the Pen on Patreon. To learn more about Bobby and prison reform, visit our website, notesfromthepen.com. And follow us on Twitter to stay current. This has been another Notes from the Pen production.